excuse me, I have to clear my throat before I start. I want to read today from an article that's called Share the Good News with a World That Badly Needs It by William Sinkford, who's the former president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. He writes, I spent some time recently rereading Our Purposes and Principles. You may well think that I can recite them by heart. Can anybody recite them by heart? Not even me. But periodically, I may get a point to read them again. It's a good discipline to revisit our foundational language occasionally. We're having so much success making our faith more visible in the world that more and more of us are getting asked the question, what's a Unitarian Universalist? When most of us answer, we tend to go first to the seven principles. But what struck me as I reread the principles was that they contain not one piece of traditional religious language, not one single word. And this is a wonderment to me. Hold on a minute. Is this true? I mean, not that anybody would ever challenge the truth of what the president says, your association, but let's look together at the principles and sources on the back of your order of service. Just let your eye run over them, and I think you'll notice the words justice, freedom, truth, and covenant. Aren't these words from the vocabulary of traditional religious language? Take special notice of the word idolatry. That's one of the central concerns of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Sinkford may not be completely right about not one single word, but he's got a bigger point to make. Here's what he writes. Our resistance to religious language, I believe, helps to account for the struggle that so many of us experience in trying to say who we are as Unitarian Universalists. I always encourage people to work on their elevator speech. What you'd say when you're going from the sixth floor to the lobby and someone asks you, what's a Unitarian Universalist? You've got 45 seconds. Here's my latest, he says. The Unitarian side tells us there's only one God, one spirit of life, one power of love. The universalist side tells us that God is a loving God, condemning none of us, valuing the spark of divinity that's in every human being. So my version, he says, of what Unitarian Universalism stands for is this. One God, no one left behind. And he continues, he's careful, he's experienced. So he says, many of you I know are bothered by the use of the word God. I understand. I called myself an atheist when I came to Unitarian Universalism and was a devoted humanist for years, though my spiritual path has taken me elsewhere. But religious language doesn't have to mean God talk. Your elevator speeches may be very different from mine. Hone them. Put a name to what calls you and to what you find yourself called to do in response. Practice telling it to others. We have good news for a world that badly needs it. But we may need to expand our vocabularies if we want others to hear us. In faith, William G. Sinkford. Bill was writing from Boston at a time. It's a nice, safe distance. But now he's moved close by to serve as the minister of First UU Church in Portland. So there's a good chance that you're going to run into him at a district meeting. If we end up hosting one of those meetings someday here, there's a good chance that someday, some Sunday morning, he'll be here in this church and there might be a quiz. And we have a tradition of a quiz. Will you be prepared for it? Well, I'll do my best to help get us ready today. But before the quiz, let's sing. Hymn number 298, Wake Now My Senses. The bottoms of those the hymns, there's usually some indication of where they came from and who wrote the modern words. And this one, it says, was an old Irish melody. I wonder what the original words were. Probably something similar to what we heard earlier. Okay, so I know this isn't Boston or even Portland, There aren't many tall buildings around here, so for most of us, it might make more sense to prepare a front porch speech than an elevator speech, and that's what I'll be sharing some thoughts on today. Yesterday, we had a workshop, and I kept calling it an elevator speech after having written the title, Front Porch Speech, and people were starting to shout, Front Porch Speech! I was revealing my Chicago roots, where we do have tall buildings. People regularly come to most of our front porches with a prepared religious speech. So why not reply with one of our own? What do you say about this religious way that we're traveling together, while also taking it step by step in your own individual way, when you only have a few moments to say it? How would you answer Sinkford's question about where is the unity in our diversity in a language that most people can understand? Well, here's some examples that I've gleaned from our national magazine, the UU World, over the last few years. People wrote in after Bill Sinkford made his challenge. People sent in, well, here's my answer. Here's my speech. Here's the first. Most religions work to get people into heaven. Unitarian Universalists work to get heaven into people. That's snappy. Ain't that snappy? But it doesn't say much about our particular religious identity or history. So there's a little weakness there. Here's the second one. Unitarian Universalism grew out of Christianity, with the Unitarians believing in the unity of God and the Universalists believing in universal salvation. We've developed into a religion that draws spiritual wisdom from many different sources. It's a place where people come together to share and learn from each other's spiritual journey. We help each other in our search for God or the sacred, even though we realize that each person's vision of God or the sacred is different. We believe in the importance of individual conscience spiritually and socially, as well as the responsibility towards the community and creation that comes with that freedom. This one's everything that the first one's not, with history and development and a summary of current approaches, but it lacks any snap, and it feels a little bit limp or dry. Not untrue. Well, this next one is number three, another shorter one. Everybody liked this one yesterday. Unitarian Universalists believe that all life is sacred, all existence is interconnected, and that justice and compassion must be the foundation of our thoughts and deeds. You could sure do worse than this one. It's got a sense of wonder and a sense of moral rigor, and those are the stuff of religion, if anything is. But once again, it seems a little nonspecific. That could be an asset, but I wonder if we could do a little bit better. Well, here's number five. Number four. As an institution, Unitarian Universalism is concerned with this life and what can be done to make it better for most people. This life. In the theological or spiritual realm of the unprovable, it's do it yourself. Your responsibility is to determine for yourself what speaks to you and what you need to believe. Do it yourself. I like that. I think that's very true. When it comes to do it yourself, speaking of do it yourself, would you feel better about trying a do it yourself front porch that someone had made or a do it yourself elevator? I'd be worried with the elevator about getting stuck between floors or falling splat into the basement before my companions and I ever got started sharing our little speeches with each other. So I'm going to make an executive decision and share some thoughts about what we can learn about constructing front porch speeches by thinking about how to build an actual front porch. If you plan to build a front porch, it's best to choose framing material that, one, comes in manageable dimensions. Two, that's rot resistant and durable. Three, it's straight, square, and true. Now, here we are in the former Carpenters Union Hall. We've got to honor that. Four, it's commonly available, not rare or exotic. You can use materials like that later for finishing touches. So pay close attention to first things first, and things will go better later on. Manageable dimensions means working with sizes that you can handle. Go for shorter lengths and lighter weights. 2x4s are easy to handle. If you get into thick timbers like 12x12s, you're going to need a lot of help. Don't buy 20-footers, but stick with 8 feet or less if you can. Your wooden frame should be material that's naturally resistant to bugs and moisture, something like Douglas fir, redwood, or cedar, something that'll last a long time. Ask around, and old-timers will help you choose. Keep things level, plumb, and square, and it'll be easy to find windows or doors that'll fit. If your angles are eccentric or inconsistent, it'll be hard to incorporate anything else into your framework. Don't rely on weird stuff. There will be hard to find or make it difficult to even explain what it is that you're looking for. These principles can help you in the construction of a front porch speech as much as in building an actual front porch. I've never built an elevator shaft, but it probably applies to that as well. So, when constructing your front porch speech, I propose that you consider choosing materials that also come in manageable dimensions, not too long or heavy, that run straight and true without twists or cracks, that are rot resistant and have stood the test of time, that are well known, easily available, and easy to handle right off the stack. Start with a neat list of materials, obvious choices, first things first. Save the rare and exotic stuff for finishing touches. We put first things first on any list for a reason, although the reason might not always be apparent. Ideally, the first item on a list serves as a strong introduction. Putting it there might even carry the message, if you hear nothing else, hear this. And remember, the first commandment of the Hebrew Bible may be read as the key to all the other commandments. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is taken by many as the beating heart of our national covenant, the core agreement about how we can stick together with all our similarities and our differences. The Golden Rule is known, if not practiced, by virtually all Americans, and it's probably the first moral teaching that most of us commit to memory. The second is probably finders, keepers, losers, weepers, which means doing pretty much the opposite of what the Golden Rule says, which I'm sure you know, I don't need to repeat it. These statements are all manageable in size, rot-resistant, and durable, straightforward, and easily adapted to bigger structures. They're widely available off the top of almost every head and the tip of almost every tongue. Let's use them and see what we can put together. Let's start with the oldest, the first commandment from the book of Deuteronomy. Oh, that's usually where you hear these scary rules about don't do this, don't touch that, you know, anyway. But it's got some good stuff in it. It starts with an I statement, right? Nice and straight. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a graven image or a likeness of anything that's in heaven above or the earth beneath or that's in the water under the earth. Now, the Ten Commandments, as you know, are often in the news, especially when someone tries to post them in schools or courthouses or other public places. Some people want to make them the cornerstone of our society, and they have certainly proven their durability over the years. But if you do an internet search and look at the many photos of these monuments that are out there, you'll notice right away that something's missing from the First Commandment in every single one of them. What is it? It's the part about bondage or slavery. Maybe this part makes people in the former Confederate states uncomfortable for obvious reasons. But don't forget that there are plenty of people who push for commandment posting in old Union states as well. The First Commandment links bondage with idolatry. You can't serve idols or worship false gods, it says, not if you would be free. Bill Sinkford speaks of the Unitarian affirmations of one God, one spirit of life, one power of love, all powerful notions. But there was a negative or oppositional side to Unitarian thinking as well, like there is to the first commandment. Old-time Unitarians saw the Orthodox God in three persons as an idol installed by church and civil authority. Free inquiring minds, they said, would discover this very quickly through reading the scriptures and through free discussion with other inquiring minds. Therefore, the church had restricted such freedom on pain of imprisonment, exile, or death, arrogating godlike power and authority to itself as it imposed on humankind the worship of a three-headed graven image. Now, I hardly need to mention to free inquiring minds like yours that there's something a little idolatrous about posting a Ten Commandments monument front and center as you come into school or lit by floodlights in the middle of the courthouse square. Some people treat their book of scriptures like an idol to be worshipped. Or a leader of their political party. Or their economic system. Or their favorite news channel. Or you name it. Someone said that idolatry means to ascribe ultimate worth to things that are not ultimate. But Unitarians fought for freedom from any idolatry of body, mind, or soul. For many, as Bill Sinkford mentioned, that freedom has included freedom from any fixed idea of God, which is not too surprising. Nor is it unbiblical. Time and again, the God of the Bible warns us against making or worshiping an idol of him, an idol of clay or stone or language, maybe. It's as if God is saying that he, she, or it will not be imprisoned by any of these media, rejecting bondage for him, her, or itself as much for human beings. Don't some people seem to speak of a God who can be leashed and collared by words and prayers and made to do their bidding, essentially? But the first commandment's God should be at least as free as we are, don't you think? When atheists and agnostics say, "Take no such thing as that God of yours," a real God might actually feel relieved. As for us, I think that most of us affirm the spirit of this great commandment, even if the God words leave us cold. Well, moving on, the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is just as powerful as the First Commandment, and it resembles it in some important ways. Here it is. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. If that's not the beating heart of the Constitution, I don't know what is. And if it doesn't echo the Bible's prohibition of idolatry, I don't know what does. No religion shall be set up over all nor forbidden to any. There will be no words that everyone is commanded to utter, no prayers or creeds or theologies, nor will there be words that can't be spoken, printed, or broadcast to the world. No one can tell us who can congregate or how for politics or prayer or play. No one stands above us all like a graven image, sacrosanct and immune from criticism and a calling to accounts. No church or party, no bank or corporation, no priest or king or queen or president shall ever act the part of God. Not on our watch. No, sir. The versions of the Golden Rule appear in almost every major world religion. This is our third major framing material. But most of us as kids learned a popular version that's really easy to remember. What is it? Got it, yeah, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's never put exactly like that in the Bible. That's nice and straight. It seems easy to handle, at least at first. It's really more of a tool, if you think about it, than a building material. More like an old-fashioned ruler or yardstick. But you still need to watch out for splinters when you use it. It appears several times in different versions. Here's Matthew's version. Judge not that you shall not be judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that's in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there's a log in your own eye? So whatever you wish that men would do to you, do so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. For him, this is the summary of all the religious teaching that came before him. We're usually pretty clear about how we would be done unto, aren't we? But the log in our own eye often blinds us to how we are really doing unto others and how different are the standards that we apply to them. The Gospel of Luke holds the do and done unto measurements in very exacting standards. Notice how different this is from Matthew. I say to you that here, love your enemies. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. To him who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And as you wish that men would do to you, do so to them. So I trust that you don't need me to break this down any more for you, or to draw it out any longer. That's the way it is when you're working with good quality materials that come in the right dimensions already. I trust that you've already degendered the language and worked out how self-destructive and self-abusive people will need some extra training before working with this particular length of wood, whether it's framing lumber or a measuring tool. Don't do unto me, please, like you do unto yourself, until you learn to do much better. Right? Please don't, a lot of people, I've got to say this, don't treat me like you treat yourself. Right? Once you get that figured out, though, we can give it a try. I've spoken a bit about the old-time Unitarians and idolatry. You could say that the old-time Universalists simply applied this golden rule when it came to questions of heaven and hell. How could you wish eternal joy for yourself while wishing eternal pain for someone else? I'm sure that many non-universalists would say, hey, it's not me sending other people to hell, it's God. To which the universalists would have said, yeah, right. We're sure that your ideas about who God sends one way and who goes the other have nothing to do with how you feel about them. Wink, wink. But no, in the end, there are no finders, keepers, losers, weepers. All are found. All are kept. There will be no loss or weeping then. We've had enough of that already. Heaven is for everyone. No one will be damned. There's no need to prepare for rejection, dejection, disappointment, disgust. Come off of high alert. Come off of high alert. Come off of high alert. There is no endless hurt. You're safe. Saved. Safe. 19th century, 18th century universalism in a nutshell. Is it true? I don't know. But that's what our forebears so clearly and dearly believed. Maybe all it takes to make it true is practice and companions. At least as true as it can be. First Commandment, First Amendment, Golden Rule, they're all just about the right length already and the right weight to handle, and they've proven quite long-lasting through centuries and millennia of good times and bad. But now it's time to put it all together into a front porch. Here we go. Hammer, 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 and then knock, knock, knock. Here's my front door speech, front porch speech, based on first things first. Unitarian Universalists affirm the spirit of the First Commandment, the First Amendment, and the Golden Rule. The First Commandment says idolatry means slavery, so no thanks, I'll take freedom. The Constitution's First Amendment links freedom of religion to freedom of speech and expects us to challenge the claims of the powerful. You know the Golden Rule, and I'll bet you think there should be no exceptions to it. Neither do we. So if you ask us how to be saved, we'll tell you that the best way is to live as if everyone has got to be saved. First Commandment, First Amendment, the Golden Rule for everyone. What do you think? Does that make you feel safe enough to hang around together on a front porch that I've built for coffee or tea or lemonade? Does it make you happy that I built a front porch instead of an elevator? If it doesn't work for you, I invite you to take it apart and salvage whatever materials you can use, or just borrow it temporarily while yours is still under construction, and tell people, now this is what my minister says. Finders keepers, let me keep what's awkward or confusing while you find what works for you. First Commandment, First Amendment, and the Golden Rule for everyone. Remember, it's only a beginning. The front porch isn't the whole house. That should be clear from the name, Unitarian Universalist. A full 10-syllable name. Unitarian Universalist. That's only equaled by Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Right? And surpassed by a few like African Methodist Episcopal Church. And that should be fair warning to anyone that there's still a lot to talk about, whatever we say the first time we meet. There's a big house to explore once you get past that front porch. I hope that all of this has given you some ideas of your own. As our neighbor Bill Sinkford said, your speech may be very different from mine, but please continue to, quote, put a name to what calls you, and to what you find yourself called to do in response. Practice telling it to others. We have good news for a world that badly needs it. We really do. And knowing this may be the best place to start. Blessed be.